welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm pleased to have with me today in the studio for University Matters, Dr. Engineer Stephen Abela and Mr. David Greck, who is a student within Dr. Abela's department. Dr. Abela is a senior lecturer in the Department of Metallurgy and Materials Engineering, and we're going to discuss David's research, which he carried out as part of his final dissertation project in his BSc Honours Chemistry and Physics. And this has meant that he's been involved with this project, DIACOM, whose funds were awarded by the Malta Council for Science and Technology and also the IMA Engineering Services. He's now moving on and reading for his Masters in Mechanical Engineering. Welcome to you both. Perhaps a first question, a first comment from Dr. Abela about the importance of what the students are doing, because normally on this program, for the most part, I have academics like yourself coming to talk about their research. Mm-hmm. But today you've brought a student with you, so I'd like to sort of know why you feel that it's important, or why you feel it's important to talk about what the students are doing.
Well, the students actually play two very important roles in university. First of all, as time comes by, we need someone to replace us. So students are very important because they can carry on our work in the future. Of course, they would also have their own work. Okay, so students are the way to progress and are the future of our own country. So that's an important aspect. The other aspect is that as we grow older, we're supposed to get wiser. In actual fact, we understand more and more of our lack in the global knowledge. Okay, we have more questions. And to answer those questions, we need a helping hand, okay? We apply for projects, we propose new ideas, and those ideas have to be developed, okay? If we were to do everything ourselves, we would be bogged down on one particular aspect, and our breadth would be very limited. So students, in a way, are our hands. They can carry on our ideas, develop them, and develop the technologies which we propose.
In fact, your fourth-year students for many years have been creating an exhibition of their final-year dissertations, and I'm always incredibly favourably impressed by the work that they're doing. These projects are, in fact, usually problem-based, aren't they? Either industry comes in and says, yes, you know, we've got a problem, and they sort them out.
That is the nature of engineering. That's what makes engineering different from science. I mean, I usually like to think that the definition of engineering is the useful application of sciences. Now, to do that, you need a need, and you use your science knowledge to get to a solution. So, in order to contribute to society, we look to the needs of our industry, because that is the wheel which keeps the economy going, and of course it gives us numerous opportunities to do our research.
But you wouldn't, people probably think of students and, you know, they're just students, but in actual fact, by the time they're getting to the end of their course, they've got quite a baggage of knowledge already. They won't have the vast experience that the older academics have, but they have a good enough knowledge to be able to help out in a situation guided by their academics.
I wouldn't use the term just students. I mean, students are academics in the making. I mean, I recall myself as a student, and I remember my strengths and weaknesses. I mean, if they manage to build on their weaknesses and strengths, they would eventually become full-fledged academics just like we are.
Right, perhaps I can turn now to David Gregg, who's been has spent many hours, I imagine, in this last year working on this project. Perhaps we could start off a little bit by saying that you must have been inspired to take up engineering, and your enthusiasm must have sort of grown. What actually inspired you? Were you inspired by the fact that you could deal with topical issues? Did engineering always fascinate you?
Well, my fascination started in my early teens. So by 12, I was already into cars and engines. So, and, you know, my father had a little bit of chemical knowledge. And so every now and then I would ask him, you know, could you get me some hydrochloric acid? And I would do a bit of hydrogen there and a pop here. So
things that make boys happy.
Yes, yes. And so then I just got in love with science, especially chemistry. And by the end of when I did my A-levels in chemistry and physics, I was, that's when I had to decide whether to continue for an engineering degree or as a chemistry and physics. So I then decided to go for chemistry and physics so that I would learn more about the fundamentals of the subjects, which would then could lead for a more applied issues. So then I had this opportunity to go for a master's in mechanical engineering, and it was quite I was really enjoyed that I got accepted for it.
Very good. The project itself, we were talking before about problem-based projects. In this DIACOM project, there was a problem. What was the problem? Tell us about the problem you were trying to solve.
So the problem is about heat. Nearly every engine, every kind of even electronic processors, they generate heat. And this limit is one of the main limits for higher performance processors and engines. It has to do with the amount of heat they generate. Now, if one is not able to compensate to take away all that heat that is being generated, and keep your system within a limit of temperature, this could lead to a breakdown, for example, melting or as structural breakdown. So, for example, every device it would have its working temperature range stated. For example, for mobile phones, it's maybe 50 degrees. You know, keep this item below 50 degrees. And well, this applies also for every other thing. For you have your computer, your laptop. After 15 minutes of doing maybe streaming a video or watching an HD video on it, it would start getting very hot, especially. And well,
I think it's an example that I think all our listeners who are computer users would recognize. When you keep your laptop on your lap, it's all very well for the first 10 minutes, but after that you think, ouch, gosh, this is bothering me a lot.
Yeah, so it's not even it is causing harm not only for yourself but also for the device itself,
shortening its life.
Yeah, so I had such sad experience that my laptop broke down during my dissertation itself. And
very ironic. My goodness.
Yes.
Did you lose a lot of data?
No, it's just one of the components of my computer broke down, not where I was storing my data. And I also was keeping backups.
Thank God for that.
Yes. Yes.
God bless backups. So the project was to try and solve this problem.
of the overheating and the damage caused to the machine, because this isn't just a matter of changing a battery or something. This is the actual machine that can actually get damaged.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the thing is that when you have heat being generated, you need to take it away. And so they engineers came up with heat sinks. Now, one of the limiting factors for heat sinks is either its design or else its material. So I focused my research on the materials being used for the fabrication of these heat sinks. And this is where the thermal properties of the materials come in play. So when I was doing my research, I was looking for materials that have a high thermal conductivity and a low coefficient of thermal expansion. So these are two terms which deal. One of them is the amount of heat which can be transported through the material. So this is a question about a good thermal conductor and an insulator. And the other term which I stated, it has to do with how much the material grows as its temperature increases. It's volume
expands.
It expands, exactly.
And how did you go about finding these wonderful materials that were going to help out?
So, there is this particular material. It's diamond. Yes, very. It's
very evocative, isn't it?
Yes. The thing is that I did not actually use large diamonds.
That would make the computer extremely
expensive.
They were expensive.
Sparkly, though. They were sparkly.
Uh-huh.
But diamonds are beautiful. Not only because of their the way they refract light inside them, but also because of their chemical and physical properties. So for thermal conductivity, just stating a couple of values, while metals are capable of transporting maximum the about 420 watts per meter Kelvin, per centimeter Kelvin, diamond, it's able to transport about 2,000.
Gosh, that does sound like a big difference.
It is. So what I tried to do was to get to make a composite, which is brought about by combining both diamonds and metals together. And I try to reach this goal of a high value of thermal conductivity.
And these diamonds that you were using, I imagine that you could use the real thing that comes out of the ground if you wanted to. But reading through a few notes you sent me before this, so that I would gen up a little bit on your on what you were doing, you mentioned that you use also synthetic diamonds.
So I only used synthetic diamonds. This is because you could buy quite easily synthetic diamonds, and they have their structure and their you could buy a kilogram of diamonds, and you buy them as grit. It's either large particles or as very small particles, and they are much easier to handle and more appropriate
cheaper?
for engineering purposes. They could be cheaper, yes. They could. There are, but natural diamonds. You could buy synthetic diamonds which are so perfect that they could be much more expensive than.
Really?
Yes.
Gosh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. So when you've got your kilo of diamond grit in your hand, what do you do with it?
I only bought as far as a few hundred grams of diamonds. So my aim of research was to get this diamond powder. I mixed them with some metal powder. And then, after I process them through a sintering technique, and sintering. It's a technique where you get your a powder, and you heat it under pressure, and the metal would start to melt, to partial melt, and in the end you get a solid material. So the challenge for my research was to get these diamonds to stick, to adhere well to the metal matrix.
The idea of heating metal at that temperature is must be quite a formidable problem. The equipment we have at university, you're able to create that kind of thing easily.
Yes, it's quite a general process.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when you've got your materials, you've done your composite, you've created this composite, and then you have to, I suppose, apply it in some way to the machine you're working on.
So my research focused not on applying this material which I was producing, but rather to enhance the performance of the material which I was doing. The challenge was to, as I already stated, it's to get the diamonds to stick onto the metal matrix. And I was doing that through a chemical process. It's called electrolysis plating, and which would serve as a nice glue to stick these two different materials with each other. And one of the challenges was to get this glue to be as thin as possible.
So, yes, you were mentioning nano.
Yes,
nanometers,
it's in the nanoscale.
Tell us something about what is a nanoscale.
So a nanoscale. So we start with a meter, and by dividing it in 1,000, you get a millimeter. Now you get that millimeter, and you divide it again in 1,000. You get a micrometer. Now get that micrometer and divide it again by 1,000. Now you are in the nanoscale.
In the nano world.
Yes.
And how do you, obviously microscopic we're talking here.
So I was working in the ranges of hundreds of nanometers. During my results showed that I had coatings 200 nanometers thick. And I was able to see those scales using a scanning electron microscope. It's one of the most beautiful instruments I've seen, and thanks to the Department of Metallurgy, to Materials and Metallurgy, I was able to use it during my dissertation. And
yes, I've seen some of the equipment in Dr. Abela's laboratory, and it's beautiful to look at, but also obviously beautiful to use, as you're saying, and it's good that we've got that kind of equipment available for our academics and obviously for our students as well. It seems incredible to me, obviously, that I don't understand anything about this sort of thing, but such a slim coating of whatever can actually make a difference.
So the thing is that the thinner it is, this glue, the better the performance of my final composite. It has to do with the transport of vibrations in the crystallography of the composite, because every time you introduce something in a pure element, in a pure substance, you are introducing a barrier. So the function of this interface was to get diamonds to react with it through a chemical process or else through a physical process of diffusion. And but on the other hand, it would also serve to get the metal to stick with this interface. So this is because normally for the matrices which are normally used, like copper and aluminium, they are not able to stick to adhere with the diamonds. It has to do with the chemical properties of both materials. But on the other hand, if I put this nanometric interface, well, you would start getting your desired properties.
Wow. And that's what you found at the end of the day?
Yes, yes.
You sort you had a hypothesis and you realized it at the end of the day, or did you find new things as you were going along? You had an idea in your mind that it was going to be like that, and
exactly.
It was.
The idea was generated when we applied for the project. I mean, we usually the person who proposes the project has a concept and an idea. He applies for funds. If he gets the funds, he gets to test his hypothesis. Because the way we get there depends mostly on the student. He gets to test the hypothesis and tries various things. And that's how we got to this solution.
And so this project now, you've sort of finalized it, or do you feel that there's more work to be done to...
I finalized my dissertation.
Uh-huh.
And now I'll be continuing to work on it during my master's course.
Mm-hmm.
So, and yes, there is quite a lot of work to be done, and very interesting work.
Good, that's fantastic. And turning again to you, Stephen, this obviously, I'm listening to David, has been very interesting. Not only the project is interesting, but it's really interesting to listen to a student explaining what they're doing and with such enthusiasm. This was a practical, it was a proposition, it was a hypothesis, which will be of interest to industry.
Yeah.
And I suppose this link is something that your faculty is very into.
Yes. In fact, I would like to take this opportunity to thank MCST for providing the necessary funds to make this thing possible. I mean, SMEs in general don't have the necessary funds to employ scientists, not even to conduct such research. I mean, the required amount of investment is way too high. However, if we can propose projects in conjunction with industry, so in academia we have the required knowledgeable people, okay, with the required expertise and experience, and also we have the facilities required to conduct research, especially now after the investment through the ERDF programs. Now, through this investment, not only we are doing our academic work, which of course we long to do for a long time, but we have the means to translate the results directly into industry. So it's not only money going into academia, but the people who are paying taxes are getting a return. Okay, if our economy becomes more competitive, if our industry becomes more competitive, they can generate more jobs, they can generate more taxes, and from the income they generate, the Maltese population will benefit.
Absolutely. This is obviously extremely important, and engineering is very well placed, of course, to make this very interesting and productive link with industry. And mm-hmm. there are other students out there, like David, who are actually working on other projects, I imagine, similar.
Through these scholarships and through these research programs, we have witnessed a steep increase in postgrad students. I'm not saying that it's enough. I mean, it's never enough. I mean, we're far from saturating our capabilities, and I urge the authorities to do more in this area, because Malta can benefit much more. I mean, we wouldn't be afraid to do more efforts. I mean, we need more students. We are capable of doing much more.
And as you say, with the investment, the ERDF projects, and I've seen some wonderful equipment, not only in your laboratory, but in other laboratories, physics laboratories, chemistry laboratories, all around the university now, which are boosting the capacity of our own academics and students as well.
Yeah. Instruments is just the means. I mean, the only way that we can fully utilize this new equipment is to sponsor young scientists so they can engage this career. I know it's not the easy way out, but it's definitely one way in which you can get a lot out of. I mean, it's very rewarding.
Absolutely. Just turn to David again, just to say a word.
Yes, so I would like to really thank my head of Dr. Arman Masanagra, the head of chemistry. So he was my supervisor for the dissertation. He was supporting me all throughout my dissertation, even though it was more on the engineering side than chemistry, but he totally supported me. And my Michael Attard, he's the chief of IMA Engineering Services, who also contributed to this project by providing the funds and also the laboratory.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you both very much, Dr. Engineer Stephen Albella and David Gregg, for coming to talk to us today. Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in the series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.